everyone. Welcome back to the Tide Pool Podcast. My name is Tyler Shibish.
I'm Matt Nash.
And I'm Joshua Ragsdale.
And we are joined today by Mr. Brandon Cox. Brandon, you are a member of the bowling team. We had that discussion beforehand. It's a team. But welcome to the show.
Happy to be here.
Okay, so bowling. Tell us a little bit about why you got into bowling.
I actually didn't start bowling until I came here.
Oh, really?
And the funny story of how it happened is freshman year, it was get on board day, and it was the one where it was an end of the world storm, and so everyone rushed into the ferg. And so I'm just kind of walking through the ferg, and I look to my right, and I see two people dressed up as a bowling ball and a bowling pin in like a really big inflatable outfit. I'm just looking at them like, that looks fun. I just signed up for it.
I would love to dress as an inflatable bowling pin.
And I just signed up for it and started.
Okay.
It's all about presentation, apparently.
Huh? It was you got to draw the attention.
Yeah. Their advertising is on par.
It's not a much better way to draw it to bowling than a giant inflatable outfit.
Yeah. So you've, since then, was that freshman year?
That was fall of freshman year.
Okay. So you've been bowling for about 3 years now?
3 years now. We're done for this year, so it's 3 years.
Yeah. So how did the year go in terms of bowling?
Slow improvement. The problem with bowling for us is we are a club team, and because bowling is obviously not an NCAA sport because it's bowling. But the thing is, we compete against private schools and smaller schools that are scholarship teams, some of which are sponsored free stuff. 70 bowlers on the team.
Jeez.
And we even bowl against club teams that are scholarship teams. Mm-hmm. Wichita State, they're a club team, but they're a scholarship team. Florida State, they're a club team. I don't know that they give scholarships, but they're close. So it's like, we don't do that.
Okay. So how, you said slow improvement. How exactly is a bowling match scored? Do you just like add up the total points from everyone on the teams?
Or? Not at all.
Okay, yeah. I assume it's going to be some weird thing.
It's also not matches. They're tournaments.
Tournaments.
Ooh.
Okay. Tournaments.
Well, I didn't know if everything was a tournament.
Yeah, no. Everything's a tournament.
Okay, makes sense.
Your typical tournament, now this varies, but typically it's Saturday, Sunday. Saturday you'll bowl either 5 or 6 games individual. That means you pick 5 people out of your team and they bowl 5 or 6 normal games like you would just go bowl.
Yeah.
And it's then on Sunday, you'll bowl as few as 16 and as many as 36 team games.
Oh, God.
Team games.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So
okay.
It's okay. 5 people bowling 1 game. So one bowler will throw the first frame and the 6th frame. Second frame, 7th frame, 3rd frame, 8th frame, and so on.
Okay.
And so the first day, for the tournament, it's total pins for both days added up for the entire team. So you take all of the pins you got from the 5 games, individual, you add those up, and then you add it to whatever you get the second day, which is Baker Day. Team games are called Baker Games.
Okay.
And for the first day, there's also all-tournament team, which is whoever had either the highest pinfall or the highest average. It depends on the tournament, what they choose to do.
Okay.
So. But it's all-tournament teams, top 5 individuals. And then obviously you have whichever teams won. Now, that does vary because there are single-day tournaments. Mm-hmm. There are tournaments that are just Baker games. There are tournaments that are just individual games. We did a tournament where the first day was individual games. It was its own tournament. And then we did the second day, which was the 36 games day. And that was its own tournament.
Sounds like so much bowling. Yeah.
With that day, I think we were there from 7 in the morning until 4 o'clock.
Jeez.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So
a lot of bowling.
You said earlier some of the club teams had up to 70 people on their team.
That's like very rough,
scholarship team.
Very rough estimate. That's one particular university.
Yeah.
Who is it?
It's Weber International.
Okay.
Ooh.
They're a very small private school in Florida, but they're probably one of the most heavily sponsored and funded. They practice. Kegel is the company that puts out like a lot of the tech for oil and stuff like that. And they practice at their international headquarters.
International headquarters? That's like, they call it that?
It's their headquarters. It's literally like their bowling alley where they test their stuff. But that's where they practice.
Wow. So I'm imagining that we don't exactly have a quote-unquote international headquarters.
Bolero.
They got a deer head.
Yeah.
We've got a car in the lobby.
Yeah, so it's Bolero where everyone practices on the team.
Where we practice as a team once a week.
And then how many people are on the team, like our team? Rough estimate. You don't need to do
quick math. This, I think, 12 okay. or 13, something like that.
All right.
I think that's right. Because it varies. It's been pretty consistent because most of the people on the team are our age. I think 60 to 70% of our team is graduating next year.
Oh, good Lord. That's going to be a fun season next year.
Well, it's everybody came in at the same time.
That's true.
And then we have one guy who's the president who's technically a year older than us, but he's going to be a fifth-year graduate.
Okay.
So he's still graduating with us.
So have the people who were in the bowling ball and the bowling pin already graduated, or are they still there? Also, are they mascots?
I don't even remember who actually dressed up as that. But I don't think they're on the team anymore. I think they actually left the year I was there, like in the middle of the year.
It sounds like a senior thing to do.
Yeah.
Just dress up as
a I don't remember. I know they're not on the team anymore, but I don't remember who it was.
All right, that's fair. So I actually wanted to ask you a question. I remember you and I have had some private discussions about different bowling venues. So in terms of some of the best places you have actually bowled at, where would you say is probably the best venue for just straight up tournament style bowling?
It's got to be Bama Lanes, right?
Of course.
Or Bolero.
Yeah. Oh,
just,
boy.
Well, Bama Lanes is the old one that opened in like the 60s in Tuscaloosa.
You have it one step higher. Because at first year, my freshman year, we practiced at Leland.
Ooh.
Now, to put it in perspective, because you're basketball people, basically. Yeah. Leland would be like if you went to play basketball outside on a grass court with patches of asphalt in it.
All right.
That's basically what it was.
So it was the highest quality court in the land.
Yeah. We've actually practiced at a different bowling alley every year. Because we were at Leland my first year, we were at Bama Lanes last year, and we're at Bolero now.
And so Bolero is
I've heard rumors of there's another bowling alley opening in Tuscaloosa.
Four years.
So we might go to a different one again.
Why would you change from Bolero? I've been in there, Bolero looks nice.
Okay, here's the thing. Because the question was, what's the best tournament bowling alley I've been to?
Yeah.
Probably Indianapolis or Chicago. Right. One of the two. Because, now to put that in perspective, around here a big bowling alley, 30 lanes, give or take.
Yeah.
Those bowling alleys were 85 lanes.
85 lanes? So is it like five stories?
No, it's one long building.
Oh my goodness.
Now there are some, there's one in Vegas where... It's built kind of like Bolero, where half of it's on this side, half on this side. There's some where it is on different stories if it gets really big.
Yeah.
But those, because they're... The thing with Bolero, it's very nice for your average, I want to go out on Thursday, have fun with my friends and bowl. Uh-huh. Okay? There's a lot of things about it that are not great if you're trying to competitively do it. Because you have the couches, which are kind of in the way. Because at tournaments, you have 7 to 8 bowlers per team.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a team per pair, per lane. So you've got 16 people on two lanes, effectively. So if you have those couches and stuff in the way, you're crammed into a space where you don't fit.
Mm.
So it's all based on room. All
right.
But those bowling alleys, because they're the most well-upkept, there's so many variables that change from each bowling alley to bowling alley that it's really just personal preference to what you like, because they're all different.
So, how do you... practice for the variable switching every time and stuff? So you have to know that this one is this
learning way. how to deal with certain things like approaches are different at bowling alley lane to lane, actually.
Really?
And the lane actually is different lane to lane, alley to alley. Every alley has different surface that they use. Some tournaments use different patterns. It's just, there's so many things that just change as you go.
So after 3 years of bowling, can you just eyeball it and be like, okay, I have to approach this way or something? Or do you have to bowl a couple frames before you realize?
Absolutely not. The thing, it's just so wildly different, because the basic thing is, the thing that makes tournaments different than normal is that if I went and bowled a Blair right now, it would be on a house shot. And if I go bowl at a tournament, it's on a sport shot. Those are two very, very, very different things if you're bowling competitively. Because, to put it the easiest way, a house shot for a good bowler is like having bumpers up.
Really?
That's what it is. Sports shot takes away those bumpers. Where a house shot is basically shaped like a triangle on the lane. Just imagine a triangle going down. So it's dry on the outside. So if you miss to the right, because we hook the ball, so if you miss to the right, it hooks.
Yeah.
If you miss to the left, there's more oil. It doesn't hook. So it's you have a better shot. Imagine sports shot being just a rectangle. Mm-hmm. There's no help. If you miss, you miss. There's not much help for you there. So it just immediately gets so much different. And then that the oil gets taken away by the ball, so it breaks down. Mm-hmm. So every lane breaks down different than the next lane. So you could have a great shot on this one. Okay, next game we need to move six pairs that way, and that pair plays like a completely different pattern.
Okay, so then like as the day goes on too, the lanes change from the oil breaking down and stuff?
Oil breaks down from the first ball.
Okay.
And it progressively gets different depending on who's bowling on that pair, how they're playing that pair, what bowling balls are they using. It's just vastly different pair to pair a lot.
So I know that in PBA bowling, you know, Jason Belmonte, arguably the best bowler, you know, out there.
Absolutely the best
bowler. He kind of revolutionized it by kind of introducing or being the first one to popularize like the two-hand ball.
Two-handed?
What is college bowling doing? Because I throw like a backup ball, so it's just one hand kind of. So do you do
two-handed? That's very different than most people, the backup ball thing. I do that at spares sometimes for jokes. No one really competitively throws backup balls. It's just wildly inconsistent, and it's just a weird motion for most people's wrists, and they can't do it. There's not any real rules for two-handed versus one-handed. There's rules based on, like, there's a new rule where you used to could have four holes in the ball, three for your fingers and a balance hole, or if you were two-handed, two for your fingers and a balance hole, but there's a new rule where every hole in the ball has to be for gripping. So that changes that a little bit. The only real rule for two-handed is that if you throw strike balls two-handed to start the tournament, you can't throw strike balls one-handed ever the rest of the tournament. You could throw spares one-handed if you want to. You just can't throw strikes one-handed, and or that's against the rules.
So it kind of locks you in if you start with one and then you have...
Well, most, there's a good amount of two-handed bowlers. It's still very much dominated by one-handed. There's still way more one-handed bowlers than there are two-handed bowlers. But there's a good amount of two-handed bowlers.
Because I know that, like, PBA, is, it seems like now you watch it and it's always two-hand guys. So that hasn't really spread to college as much?
Well, you have to realize, when you watch PBA events, that's such a small amount of professional bowlers compared to what there actually is. Because that's the, like, top of the top of the top. You're looking at, like, 5 to 6 out of the 100 that are there. So it's still not, they're still more one-handed than two-handed. The reason there's going to be more two-handed is because I think the learning curve to learn how to hook a ball one-handed is a lot steeper than the learning curve of learning how to hook one two-handed. Not to say two-handed's easier, because it's not, but just learning basically how to hook a ball is much easier without your thumb in the ball.
Okay, and then I have to ask, earlier you were talking about backup balls. As someone who is bowled very sparingly, can you please explain that to me?
Okay, so if you're a right-handed bowler, okay, you throw the ball to the right, you hook it to the left.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? You throw it to the right, hooks back to the left.
Yeah.
To the pocket, which is the first pin and the pin to the right of that.
Okay.
A backup ball, if you're a right-handed bowler, is basically you hook the ball like a left-handed bowler.
Oh, okay.
You hook it to the right.
Yeah, okay.
I see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's literally just backwards.
Which changes your approach on the lane. A lot of times, at least for me, I stand further on the left so that when it hooks back to the right,
that's what you do.
It does better.
Not many people do it. It's typically not a very consistent way to bowl.
Yeah, sounds more difficult than
it's trick shots. I do it as like trick shots and jokes and to annoy people sometimes. The people that do it typically now do it to shoot like one pin because it's hard to throw at otherwise. Mm-hmm. But most people still don't do that.
That's right. Fair. So, I actually do have a question. So, are there such things as scouting reports in bowling? Like, do you, like, have to, like, plan for different...
Like, on teams, or what do
you mean? No. My mind's been harkening back to the venues discussion that we had. So, is there, like, a scouting report for how things, like, historically happen at venues?
Not really. It's just word of mouth, typically.
Is it?
I mean, you get 10-15 minutes practice session before the tournament actually starts. So, you just kind of have to feel your way out. You go up before it even starts, and you slide on the lane, on the approach, see if it's sticky, if it slips more.
So wait, so you just run up and jump on a
lane? Well, not on the lane. The approach, the part that you're supposed to be on.
Oh, come on. I was thinking of a little, like, Surfing USA deal. That would have been awesome.
Absolutely not. If that happens, something's gone very wrong, and it's not fun.
Okay. We're almost out of time here, but I do kind of want to ask, Josh, you said you bowled in high school, correct?
I did.
What did you average in high school about?
It was... my team was not good. I was the last person on the team. Mm-hmm. I would hit in the 130s fairly consistently. My high game in high school was at the state tournament, and I was getting in the 150s the entire day.
And then, Brandon, what do you average about per game?
I don't know what my average is. The average we shoot for is 190, 200.
Okay.
Typically keep it above 180. If you're on sport. If you're on house shot, very different. You need to average over 200.
Have you ever bowled a perfect game?
Very close, but no.
How close is very close?
279. Okay. 300 is perfect game.
It's about four times my average.
What frame did you miss it on?
10th frame.
Oh, no. Like, was it like the first ball of the 10th frame? Or was
I don't
it
know how the math works out. It was one of the shots in the 10th frame. I don't know which one it was. All I remember was I just got excited and I threw the ball too hard, so I missed to the right. That's all I remember. All right.
Well, that's unfortunate.
All right, well, that was our talk and interview about bowling. Thank you for joining us. We're going to go cut to our first break, and then we'll get back to you in a little bit. So,
The Capstone, 90.7 FM, WVUA.
This is Eli Gold, the voice of the Crimson Tide, and I love 90.7 The Capstone.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Tide Pool Podcast. Brandon is still with us today, and instead of talking about a variety of sports like we normally do in our second segment, today we're going to talk about COVID-19 and particularly what it's done to all of those sports.
It's killed them all.
Yeah.
Every sport is just
done. They're all gone. Dude, I mean, Vince Carter did it. He outlived the NBA. He retired before the NBA did.
That was the best picture I saw.
But, so anyway, there was a few things that happened in sports that I guess we could touch on real quick. Women's wheelchair basketball lost their first game after talking about them being undefeated last week.
A sad day.
Men's beat Auburn again, but...
Four times this season.
That's right. Sweep them. Get them out of here. Get the broom.
Did you say gymnastics?
Yeah, they beat Georgia. Yes. By more than a full point.
Gymnastics beat Georgia. I've got the official stats here by 1.4 points, which is a blowout.
Yeah, that's pretty big, especially when Georgia was number 10 and we were number 8 in that meet too. So that was,
I believe so.
Pretty nice blowout for senior night. So
yeah,
and Big Al's birthday.
Happy birthday, Big Al.
Happy birthday. Not to sound too nihilistic though, but it kind of looks like it doesn't really matter anymore because pretty much every major sport and college sport, like the SEC as a whole, has suspended every program and tournament. They're no longer doing March Madness. They're no longer doing the SEC tournament in Nashville.
Yep.
That means we get to claim all the national championships, right?
100%.
Yeah. What is it? Gymnastics, baseball, softball, basketball.
We didn't lose the championship.
All the wheelchair basketballs, tennis, soccer. Dude, we win them all.
The real national champion.
Dude, we broke the cycle in women's wheelchair basketball. #breakthecycle. We did it. We did not lose the championship game.
So my question for you guys is, do you think any of these seasons at all are going to resume at any point, or do you think it's too far into the season to pick it back up?
I honestly don't know. I feel like college sports might just kind of call it as it is, which is sounds sad, but like I think that there's going to be no college tournaments because most of them take place during March, or like early April, which I've now dubbed this time frame as March Sadness.
You have to put in the fact that collegiate sports versus professional sports, because collegiate sports, there's not really the players from the player base. They don't really have money in the in the business here. Yeah. So it's like if there's not the competitive aspect, if there's not the participation, if there's not the fans, it's like why? Why go through that risk? Yeah.
What's also bad, especially with like March Madness and all that, is that that's where the NCAA gets most of the money because they own March Madness. They don't own the college football playoff. That's going to probably go into the decision. You know, you never want money to affect these decision stuff. But I would say that you look at what their decision will be with March Madness. If they're just going to push it back or what, that'll probably kind of show you what they do with other sports. Like gymnastics or like, well, I guess they're not really in charge of wheelchair basketball, but I did see that those championships were canceled, which they were just supposed to happen next week. So
I think it'll be some don't come back, but I think some will. Like I think baseball will come back.
Yeah, baseball, softball.
Because the playoffs and the College World Series happen so much later than all of these other ones, I think. that I can think of that I think that one will come back. It's also different if you have an outdoor setting for people to be at versus, hey, everybody, let's cram into this small space where you're like together in an enclosed environment.
Like, I just feel really bad for the seniors that their seasons are like careers potentially are over. Like, I remember last week we had Katie on. She's talking about gymnastics. And she said that, I mean, I know the actual interview was a couple weeks ago, so you guys might not remember. But she said that a lot of gymnastics people, like, once their career is done in college, that's it. They're done. And so, imagine all the seniors throughout gymnastics and sports like that that are just...
I want to say that I saw that the NCAA has allowed an eligibility kind of extension.
Oh, really?
So they're giving those spring sports another semester to play, and they're considering it for winter sports.
Ooh.
Ooh, I don't know why they'd do it for winter sports, though, but I guess the argument is that it's unfair if they don't get another year.
It becomes a PR thing.
Yeah, I guess. I don't think that winter sports probably should, but I mean, another year of eligibility for everyone is great for all the people that aren't going to go on to like the pros and stuff. So.
I mean, PR stunts that work out for people are just, if it works out for more than just the company that's performing the PR stunt, then.
If there's a company that needs to up the PR sometimes, NCAA.
Yeah, that's fair. Not exactly the best reputation of all time.
No, not at all.
So,
I did see. You know, the NHL has suspended play, and then not too long after that, the ACHA suspended all of their national championships.
Really?
Okay.
Which, you know, doesn't affect Alabama sports at all because we were nowhere close. But, you know, it's still kind of just mind-blowing to see that.
I say, it canceled stuff for us, too. I actually shouldn't have been I was supposed to be in Nashville right now.
Oh, really?
For the postseason tournaments for our bowling. They canceled it.
Wow.
Yeah, that got shut down.
Yesterday at like 6 o'clock.
Ooh. Hey, good thing I texted you super late then.
So, all I'm hearing, though, about the ACHA is you're saying that like 1 in 24 or whatever Alabama was, 4 in 21.
Yeah.
What was our record?
Like 4, 25, and 1 in D1.
So all you're saying is that 4, 25, and 1 Alabama didn't not win the championship. Yeah, exactly. That's true.
We did not
stay the claim.
Although it's more that we didn't qualify to go to the tournament that they were having the championship.
Semantics.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. You're going into too many details.
We would have found a way.
Exactly. You know, it's all speculation at this point.
Winners do.
Yeah, we're pulling a full Central Florida right now. UCF.
And so that does beg another question. So tournaments specifically that have bigger tournament implications, for example, like the SEC tournament, got canceled. What do you do about tournaments like that that could have potentially sent someone else to a greater championship if you're the NCAA? Do you just promote the team that was in first place, or do you have to play the tournament again? Or
I think they're phoning it in. They're committed, because everything I read did not say the NCAA has postponed things. Mm-hmm. It's that they've canceled them.
So they're just completely done.
So these are professional people that work on the wording of their releases. Mm-hmm. If they were planning on postponing it to a later date, they would have said postpone. Because like the NBA, MLB did not say they've canceled anything.
Exactly.
They've suspended things. They've postponed things.
But you are also dealing with players who make a professional wage in that situation too.
Yes.
So you don't want to like end the season.
That was my point from earlier. That's why I think college sports are probably calling it for they're done, at least until the fall or the summer. Whereas professional, they're going to bring it back as soon as they can safely bring it back because of just the amount of money that's on the line for the people participating.
So during this whole event, the NBA has kind of been the forerunners for a lot of what has happened.
Yeah.
The first cancellation, or not, the first suspension of the league, of any league, was the NBA due to the fact that Rudy Gobert tested positive out of nowhere, and then Donovan Mitchell also tested positive, and another member of the Jazz staff. So since the NBA has kind of been the forerunners of all of this, do you guys think then that if the NBA does manage to simply hit that play button and resume the season where it was, obviously things would be way different. Injuries are going to be like brand new and coming back.
Yeah.
But if they're able to hit this resume button, will other leagues and potentially collegiate sports follow their example?
So I think that collegiate sports are in a tough place because the professional leagues can just extend their season through the summer. But that's a whole different semester. And like, you can't have student athletes coming back for the summer and stuff if they're not in summer school, right? So I don't know how you could force someone that's not even enrolled in school to come back for another, like a different semester, just to be able to compete in their sport that they were supposed to be able to compete in over the spring.
You're also going to run into the problem of, like, now a lot of colleges are closing campus, going purely online like we have. So how are you going to have campus closed, but you're going to bring those athletes back?
Well, campus is going to supposedly open up around the same time that, for instance, the NBA was talking about coming back at.
I just don't see it happening.
I think that
these sports are going to come back privy to their own information. Because, again, I think it comes down to venue as well. Because, like, I think baseball will come back before the NBA will.
That is a good point.
I did also see that kind of the NCAA's decision to just kind of cancel everything caught SEC officials and Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, by surprise. And he did mention in an interview that the SEC does have its own autonomy to restore the regular season of, like, baseball, softball, stuff like that.
I did see that, and that's kind of interesting if they did that, because what would you do at that point? Just play between SEC teams and compete between SEC teams if no other leagues?
So, well, I think conference play was about to start anyway, so what would the difference be, really?
So basically this is just an old man shaking his fist at, you can't control me.
And then the NCAA comes down on it. So, you know.
Nope, it's the start of the own league. Branching out.
It's slap him with a sanction. Get him out of here.
I actually love the idea now. The SEC resuming play. Like, no, once they think it's good and no one else coming back because they don't have autonomy.
Softies, y'all can't start. We can.
Yeah, exactly.
It just means more.
It does.
It just means more.
Yeah. So then, that is another interesting question. If the SEC does resume and the other ones don't, how do you think that would affect a potential extra year of eligibility?
Do you think that
would count as their year because they got to play out their conference play?
Or do you think that
it might turn to a spike call?
We're
going to show you.
Yeah,
you're going to be autonomous from us. Well, guess what? You've just screwed over all of your athletes. They're done.
Yeah, they don't get
that.
We were going to be nice, you decided to do your own thing. Hammer down.
That would hurt the SEC.
A good time for the NCAA to kind of flex its muscle. A lot of people have been kind of questioning the NCAA and the decisions it's been making, and then you've had, like, issues with state governments passing, like, the legislation to the Pay-to-Play Act and all that stuff in California that kind of forced the NCAA's hand.
Yeah.
The NCAA, I wouldn't be surprised if it's looking for an opportunity to kind of show that, no, we're still the big dogs around here when it comes to college sports.
You have to make an example.
Mm-hmm. So whoever did, or, like, say the SEC were to resume play, that would be a great time to flex its muscle, show an example.
And this, ladies and gentlemen, is what we call a tyranny.
Yeah, so if you're listening, Greg, maybe take that into consideration.
This is also what we call very hypothetical, because we're four guys sitting around a table.
Yeah.
We're not experts. Please don't take our word for this.
We are literally just college students who have displayed a mild interest in sports.
Do not quote me.
But that being said, so you think they would flex their muscles? Do you think they would say that, okay, you guys don't get extra eligibility, but everyone else that stood with our rules does?
Well, that's the thing. On the one hand, yes, it would be a good idea to flex your muscles. But people have been questioning the NCAA as of late for other reasons as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not just do they still have power, but it's like, are they a good ruling body? Yeah. Are they, like, can they work within the confines of, people need a little bit of, say, freedom. Would it then be a little bit better to say, we acknowledge that you have done this, and I don't know how the workaround would be, but
we're a benevolent ruler.
Yeah, we are a benevolent ruler.
It just depends, because it's turning into, would be a huge PR problem for how they handle it.
I know.
Because if, say, the SEC does restart, okay, are they doing that while actively talking down the NCAA, like in a very, this is to spite you, we're going to do what we want? Are they just doing it saying, well, we think it's safe, we're being told it's safe, but you're just not saying we can do it?
Again, presentation.
It depends on the scenario.
The whole people questioning NCAA ruling, too, kind of harkens back to earlier this year. I know it's basketball, but the different waivers being granted to random people. And
it's arbitrary.
Completely arbitrary. So, and it seems like a lot of the stuff they do is arbitrary. And I feel like with such an unprecedented situation, no matter what they rule, you're going to have people saying that this is arbitrary and wrong. If they were to say not let them come back for an extra year, people would complain about that, saying that they deserve to. But then if they do, you'll have people from other conferences complaining about, oh, well, we weren't able to play this year, and they're getting another year to play.
Yeah, and then it'll just harken back to the SEC gets preferential treatment argument that we see a lot of people
becomes
say.
An equity and equality issue.
Probably the best way to go about it would be for the commissioners of the different leagues to come to an agreement to say we're all going to resume play. Yes. Like, so then you'd have, like, all the conferences, like Pac-12, Big 12, Big 10, even the non-Power 5 conferences. If you get college sports united in a way like that together on the same thing like this, especially with how, you know, unprecedented it is, you know, that'd be a good way to kind of resist any possible blowback.
But does every other league also have the autonomy to recontinue, or is it just the SEC, or do we not know?
I don't know. I don't know if I've... I don't think I've seen statements yet, but I also, of course, as an Alabama student, was only really looking at SEC news.
Okay, that's fair. So, if you want
to... Oh, well... with that very positive and uplifting talk and podcast segment, we're going to call it for the day. It was nice to be here again for potentially the last time in person, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So my name is Joshua Ragsdale.
I'm Matt Nash.
I'm Tyler Shibish.
And you were listening to the... Oh, no, I guess we should introduce our guests again, so go ahead.
I'm Brandon Cox.
Thank you for joining us, Brandon.
Thank you so
much. Thank you. And this is the Tide Pool. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.